Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
If you've ever experienced dread on a Sunday afternoon of the week to come, if you have ever heard a Jimmy Buffett song and thought, I want to be the guy in that song, if you wish you had followed Frost on the road not taken, this episode is for you. My guest today has thought deeply about alternative ways to use a medical degree. Thinking outside the box, next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Sylvie Stacey. Dr. Stacey is board certified in preventative medicine. She authored 50 non-clinical careers for physicians, fulfilling meaningful and lucrative alternatives to direct patient care. Her new book is 50 Unconventional Clinical Careers for Physicians, Unique Ways to Use Your Medical Degree Without Leaving Patient Care. Both books are published by the American Association for Physician Leadership. Sylvie Stacey, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thank you, Mike. I'm excited to be back on the podcast.
Well, we're excited to have you. And I know we had a discussion back in 2020 about your first book on 50 non-clinical careers for physicians. And I've been so looking forward to the new book because the first one was just great. And I remember that first book being really comprehensive overview of major career areas that are fitting for positions outside of patient care, whether it's working for the pharmaceutical industry or the insurance industry, medical writing, communications, and all kinds of different things that you set forth so nicely. So maybe differentiate that book with your new book.
Yeah. So my first book provided a look, as you said, at non-clinical options, while this new book focuses on how physicians can leverage their medical degrees in really diverse and often overlooked clinical settings and practice types, as well as lesser known ways to get into different clinical careers through alternative pathways and training programs or certification programs that are just less commonly utilized. And the core idea behind the book is that a medical degree opens doors to many more opportunities than most of us realize. In medical school and residency, we're often funneled into traditional paths like hospital-based specialties or primary care, but our training equips us with this broad skill set that can be applied in various unconventional clinical roles and in non-clinical roles. Many doctors don't realize all the different settings in which physicians are needed outside of the clinical settings that we're usually assigned to for rotations during medical school and residency. And that's simply because those aren't usually a part of the large academic medical centers where medical schools and residency programs are held. And if you're already working in a traditional setting, there might just be no way that you learn about or hear about other options. And that sometimes makes doctors feel stuck in positions that they don't really feel satisfied in.
Very, very, very interesting. Now my curiosity is completely piqued at this moment. Can you give a few examples of unconventional career areas that you cover in the book?
Absolutely. So it covers a pretty wide range, from working at a university health center to running executive health programs to medical jobs in forensics and law enforcement, to practicing in different types of convenient care clinics and on cruise ships. It discusses careers in medical spas and aesthetic medicine, jobs in clinical pharmacology, and also unconventional types of private practice like cash-only practices and fully virtual practices. Something that always gets me fired up is hearing stories from other medical professionals. So I can give a couple examples from physicians that I've come across or had the opportunity to speak with throughout my time researching this topic. One physician that I interviewed, who was actually profiled in the new book, she trained in internal medicine and started out her career as a hospitalist. And then she started a job with the U.S. Department of State, in which she is responsible for the health and well-being of American diplomats at health units within embassies and consulates overseas. And every handful of years, she's assigned to a different post, either overseas or domestically in Washington, D.C. I believe she's currently in the country of Jordan. Said it's like having a new job every few years, but also having the benefit of continuing to work for the same organization and really understanding that organization and feeling like a part of the team. And in her case, that's the U.S. government. So she's still eligible for government retirement benefits, depending on her years of service, while feeling like she has basically a new challenge and a fresh start every few years.
Well, you have to imagine that the health concerns at different diplomatic posts would vary, right? So it'd have to be new challenges as a physician based upon where you were posted by the government. That would be very interesting, I would think.
Yeah, definitely.
Very, very cool. But now, in fairness, you've done some unconventional things in your career, and some very interesting things. For instance, you worked in a prison. Is that right?
That is right.
Well, tell me a little bit about that. And I would imagine that people unfamiliar with this might think that was a little scary.
Yeah, I would consider that unconventional. And in fact, it's one of the career areas that I highlight in the book. But working in prison medicine has been really one of the most interesting and rewarding aspects of my career. I first took on the role of corporate medical director for a company that provides healthcare services to correctional facilities like prisons and jails as my first job out of residency. And at the time, I knew the environment would be different from the traditional clinical settings that I had trained in. But it took me a while to appreciate how much those differences would actually add to my career satisfaction. Prison health and medicine was really not an area that I had ever envisioned myself working in, but I came across this job opportunity toward the end of residency that just really seemed to bring together a lot of my interests and the things that I liked about my specialty of preventive medicine. So I figured, why not give this a try? If it doesn't work out, I can always, you know, take a different job. But I turned out it was a great fit for me, and I've been doing correctional healthcare for over a decade now.
Do you see things in a prison population that you might not see in the general population as you practice medicine?
Yes, I would say we certainly do. One of the primary differences is the patient population itself. So incarcerated individuals have complex health needs that are a mix of chronic conditions, acute conditions. They might have just had a trauma or injury at the time of arrest and are coming into the facility without even getting an urgent acute issue addressed yet. They also have a lot of mental health issues. And many of these medical issues have not been adequately treated prior to incarceration because many incarcerated patients have had limited access to healthcare or they've been uninsured. So that leads to a lot of poorly managed conditions when they come into the facility. Just the physical environment of jails and prisons, providing care in this setting means that you're going through security on your way to work every day. You're dealing with security protocols and you're having to work closely with correctional staff on certain issues that go hand in hand with medical issues. For example, diversion of medication. It's an issue that involves both the clinical team and the custody team. So it's a setting that demands adaptability. You have to really be prepared for any situation that happens within the walls. It's not just in the medical unit where you're working. There could be a medical emergency like an overdose or a heart attack or a trauma from a fight in any of the housing units. So that's a big difference as well.
Very interesting. I've spoken to a few people that practice in this this area and in prisons, and universally they've said that they were surprised by how appreciative the inmates were of the care that they received. Have you found that?
I have, yeah. You certainly have difficult patients, just as with any other job in medicine. There are difficult patients, but the majority of them, yes, are very appreciative to have healthcare, which is often better than the healthcare that they were receiving before incarceration. A big component of the work that I've done within correctional medicine and outside of correctional medicine in my career has been in addiction treatment. when I initially began working in corrections, I had to manage addictions and substance withdrawal just out of necessity, because there's such a high percentage of substance use disorders in the incarcerated population. But I ended up really enjoying it. And one of the reasons that I enjoy it is because of that appreciation that patients have, and how quickly you can see someone's life turn around when you get them on the right treatment for an addiction. So I went on to just learn as much as I could about addictions, and ultimately became board certified in it through the American Board of Preventive Medicine. And of note, addiction medicine is also one of the areas that I cover in my new book, because I do consider many of the addiction treatment settings to be unconventional. Although you can practice addiction medicine in a traditional healthcare setting, like an outpatient primary care or specialty practice, or as part of a hospital consult service, there are a number of treatment settings like jails and prisons that are just more out of the ordinary. As another example, residential detox treatment facilities, also called rehab facilities. They can range from really small ones with just a couple of beds to the large, fancy, expensive rehabs that you hear about in like Beverly Hills. All of those facilities need medical directors and medical providers to assess and treat patients for withdrawal and ongoing treatment of their substance use disorders. And then there are methadone clinics or opioid treatment programs, which operate under their own very strict federal regulations. So that in and of itself is an entirely different kind of setting that you can use this same skill set of addiction medicine. And all of them have kind of different day-to-day sets of responsibilities that can be fitting for different physician personality types and the personal needs that you might have related to your home obligations and your work schedule requirements.
When we first started to talk, I think that you alluded to this, but certainly all of our audience knows and hears about burnout being a huge issue for the medical community. It occurs to me that maybe your book is a way of people being able to continue to practice clinically, but in a way that does not trigger burnout. Is that right?
Yeah. So I definitely think that burnout is closely related to the growing interest among physicians in exploring both non-traditional clinical careers and non-clinical career paths. Most listeners are probably familiar with the statistic that roughly half of physicians report having symptoms of burnout. It's alarmingly high. And I'd like to share a couple more statistics and survey findings that tie burnout in with this idea of alternative and unconventional work. So Medscape does a survey called the Physician Lifestyle and Happiness Report. And in their most recent one, they asked about the main contributors to burnout. And among the most commonly cited contributors were spending too many hours at work and feeling a lack of control over our work. And then on the topic of work-life balance, the survey data show that over half of physicians would actually take less pay for better work-life balance. And interestingly, that's in the context of less than half of physicians actually feeling like they're currently fairly compensated for the work that they do. And that's according to another Medscape survey. So despite not feeling adequately compensated, most physicians care more about their own well-being than their salary, such that they'd be willing to earn somewhat less for work that offers them a more reasonable work-life balance and helps them to avoid burnout. So I say all of that as some context to the next thing that I want to say, which is that many unconventional roles and non-clinical roles can offer competitive salaries without the intense demands that we're used to in traditional clinical work. Positions in the pharmaceutical industry are probably the most well-known among the medical community as offering both high compensation and more manageable work schedules that are typically limited to regular business hours. But that's really just one example of many. A very high percentage of what I would call unconventional careers offer greater flexibility and work-life balance, even those that are clinical in nature and involve some component of patient care. For example, various types of telemedicine, allow physicians to work from home, set their own schedules, and avoid the time and stress associated with commuting. I think there are a lot of physicians who dream about working from home to get away from a lot of the sources of burnout and the stressors that are inherent to hospitals and busy brick and mortar medical practices. But actually, traditional telemedicine is just one of the growing number of ways that physicians can work from home without leaving patient care behind.
Sometimes people like to take a side gig because it's interesting. It allows them to learn something new, maybe make a little bit of extra money. Do you focus on anything like that in your book, where people maybe not give up the day job, but do something on the side because of interest?
Yes, for sure. There are several unconventional clinical jobs that really are perfect for doctors looking to supplement their income or gain experience on the side of a full-time job. So whenever possible in the book, I did try to point out where there's specific opportunity for each career area or job type to be done just part-time or as a contractor or in addition to a standard full-time role. One category of jobs that I think is especially relevant and probably of interest to a lot of listeners is medical directorships in non-traditional settings. So physicians can serve as medical directors in environments like medical spas, blood and plasma donation centers, for EMS agencies, for hospice agencies, for opioid treatment centers, just to name a few. And in many of those and more, it's actually mandated that there be a physician-level medical director. And that mandate comes through agencies like CMS, their regulations, or other types of federal or state regulations. And sometimes through accreditation standards for organizations that want or need to get accredited. So there's real demand for physicians to fill these roles, which often involve overseeing medical protocols, ensuring compliance with health regulations, and providing clinical guidance to other clinical or healthcare staff.
Very interesting.
There are a lot of things that many doctors find really appealing about those roles. So not only can you do the work on the side, but there remains an element of direct patient care. So it's clinical work that's entirely within your wheelhouse as a doctor, but with responsibilities other than directly assessing and treating a panel of patients or doing procedures. And as I alluded to, many of them can be done on a flexible schedule. Sometimes they can be done remotely, at least for a portion of the work. And there's significant demand for these types of positions. You may have to search for them a little bit, but there are a lot of opportunities out there.
Well, maybe we could talk a little bit about that. And obviously the place for physicians to start if they're interested in this topic is with your book. But how should they go about finding opportunities?
That's a great question, because I do think the best advice is somewhat different than what I'd give to doctors who are looking for your typical, more traditional work in a medical practice or with a healthcare system. We often hear that finding a good job is all about networking. It's who you know and who you connect with. And while those connections are definitely valuable, and they oftentimes do lead you to uncovering great opportunities, especially if you network with people who have careers that you're interested in, I think that the best strategies for job searching in this situation have evolved a lot. Public job postings on job boards and career websites have become much more relevant to job seekers of all types, since there have been so many great online platforms for job ads and web-based systems that HR departments use. And I think this is particularly true for unconventional careers and for these side gigs that we've been talking about. When you're networking with peers and colleagues in traditional medical settings and jobs, you're less likely to come across people in the unconventional roles that you're interested in. So networking is simply more difficult if you're looking for something out of the ordinary. So for physicians looking into non-traditional roles, I recommend first, of course, doing your research to figure out what exactly is it that you'd like to do. And that will help you understand the specific roles that you're going to be searching for. So that might involve digging into your network and making new connections and talking with doctors who've had those careers. But then I recommend turning to job boards and job aggregators online like Indeed and LinkedIn, which can be incredibly effective for actually finding publicly posted positions. And those are, of course, really broad sites, and they have a lot of listings in all types of industries. Many of them will not be relevant to any listeners of this podcast. But because they are so extensive and have so many jobs, as opposed to doctor-specific job boards like PracticeLink or Doximity, these larger job aggregators have some of the more unconventional jobs from organizations that may not be exclusively hiring physicians. Maybe they just need a medical director or a supervising physician. So they're not going to be posting on the PracticeLink and Doximity type doctor-specific sites. So try out those bigger cross-industry job boards and just put in some time to figure out what the best keywords are, what filters you need to apply in order to get the results that are actually applicable to you. And that can take some trial and error, but it's definitely worth it.
Well, there was a pro tip. That's great. That will really help some folks, I think. Now, I mentioned early on that your book's published by the American Association for Physician Leadership. And of course, the AAPL is the primary group for physician leaders. Some are just starting out their leadership roles and aiming to get more involved in leadership positions, while others are certainly very seasoned leaders. For the first group, those just getting going in their career, how might an unconventional job help them reach their goals?
I do think that an unconventional job can help them reach their goals. That's a great point. For physicians who are just starting out in leadership roles or who are aiming to get into leadership, I think that less conventional opportunities can really help to develop leadership skills and gain more diverse experiences that are going to be highly valuable for other leadership positions. I think that too often physicians, especially early on in our careers, we tend to associate leadership with administrative roles in large healthcare systems, like a hospital department chair or a chief medical officer, or leadership in traditional private practice. Those roles are obviously very important, and I think it's really imperative that physicians do have a presence within the administration and executive suites of any organization that's providing medical services to patients. But I also want to encourage physicians to go after other types of leadership positions, potentially earlier on in their career, because there are so many other types of leadership roles. In my field of correctional medicine, for example, there is a huge need for physicians who oversee the medical services at a single jail or prison or at an entire system of facilities within a state or another jurisdiction. And a lot of different types of medical training and backgrounds can be fitting for those medical director roles. It can be internal medicine, family medicine, emergency medicine. I've seen surgeons and OBGYNs in these medical directorships. And there's a big need for psychiatrists as well to oversee the mental health programs for jails and prisons. So that's just one example. Kind of along those lines, physicians are needed for leadership roles in pretty much every other patient care setting. And for many of those roles, such as a lot of the medical director positions that I talked about previously, you don't actually need a ton of experience. And you're not necessarily managing large teams of people or managing large budgets. You're not necessarily part of the organization's C-suite. Rather, you're managing the medical components of a program. You're the go-to person for making decisions about things that are medical and clinical. And that's something that you're pretty well equipped to do through the standard training that we get in medical school and residency, and perhaps a bit of real-world experience after that. So for any doctors who want to work their way up in leadership responsibilities, I encourage them to explore different options like those.
Okay, same question, but now for the category of those seasoned leaders, maybe folks that have been out there for a while. How does the book apply to them?
Yeah, so as a physician leader of any type, But especially in the later parts of your career, after you've gained a lot of experience, you're more likely to be in a position to mentor others. So whether you're an attending physician teaching medical students or residents, or you're part of a formal mentorship program, or you're simply approached informally by colleagues seeking advice from you. In some capacity, you'll probably have students and trainees and other practicing physicians come to you from time to time, asking questions about your career path, or maybe trying to decide on a specialty, or trying to figure out what type of practice they want to join when they complete their training. Or maybe they're even confiding in you that they are burned out and they want to leave their job or even leave the field of medicine. So as a mentor, as a more seasoned leader, when you're in working in this capacity of a mentor, I would encourage you to keep in mind that sometimes the best guidance for these mentees might be very different from the path that you've taken in your own career, and it might be outside of the usual decisions that are made by doctors about their careers and the usual roles taken by doctors. You might have someone come to you who is going to truly be the most satisfied if they take a non-clinical job in industry, or someone who may only get the job flexibility that they want and need if they do something like locum tenens work, or something else where they'll have more control over their schedule. Those are just a couple examples. But as a mentor, I think one of the best things that you can do is introduce your mentees to all of the options and avenues that they may not be aware of, and let them know that it's okay to do something outside of the box or to pivot their career to something new and different. They might not even realize that these other options exist.
The book is 50 Unconventional Clinical Careers for Physicians, Unique Ways to Use Your Medical Degree Without Leaving Patient Care. Dr. Stacy, thank you so much for your time and your comments. I think it is a real act of physician leadership to put together this book to help your profession, and the AAPL is proud to be your publisher. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My thanks to Sylvie Stacy. Dr. Stacy's books serve as guides to alternatives and the possible for physicians. She is a physician leader of the first order. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpracticepodcast.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpracticepodcast.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. Holy cow, Batman and Robin, Rick Capow.